Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches. Our next speaker comes from Britain's greatest broadcasting dynasty, Jonathan Dimbleby. You'll remember him from his famous 1994 interview with the then Prince Charles. He presented Any Questions for 32 years, from 1987 to 2019. He's got two books out at the moment. One is a reissue with a new introduction of his 1979 book on the Palestinians, coming out on Friday. But he's here today to talk about his new book, Endgame, 1944, How Stalin Won the War. Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Dimbleby.
Thank you very much, Harry. Don't worry, I'm not going to read it all out. It's just the one thing I will be able to take from it later. This book, of course, is about a period where Britain's greatness, which was not in doubt, was sorely put to the test, the Second World War. It's the successor to a book I wrote before, which was called Barbarossa, How Hitler Lost the War, which I argued was in 1941, not 1945, in the sense that the Germans could not possibly prevail. This book, Endgame 1944, is subtitled How Stalin Won the War, which, of course, is a double-edged title. It suggests that the Soviet Union played the major role in the destruction of Hitler's armies, and also, through that victory, that Stalin emerged as the most powerful force in Europe, with the capacity to impose on a huge proportion of that continent Soviet communist rule. And the Cold War was the direct result of that victory, is what I suggest. The essence of the book, the way I try and write books is all levels, using diaries, letters, memoirs occasionally, often to be distrusted, things that were written at the time, at all levels, by those who were fighting the battles, by those who were commanding armies, by those politicians who were commanding countries, and the diplomatic level. In this case, the big three, as they became known, Churchill, Stalin, and, of course, Roosevelt. You have to picture 1944. The Germans are being pushed back. They've been pushed back from Stalingrad. Vast armies on the battlefield, 3,000 kilometres width, from the Baltics to the Balkans, and some 6 million Soviet soldiers. They had started the war in 1941, the great patriotic war, as they call it, with 6 million soldiers. They had already lost 7 million soldiers, but they were able to field 6 million. The Germans in 1941 had invaded with just over 3 million soldiers. Now they were down to 2.8 million. So there was a huge military advantage on the Soviet side. In addition, the Allies were in the war. Soviet Union was supported hugely by the ability of the Americans to supply vast numbers of trucks, supported by us as well to a lesser extent, the British. On that front, the mega battles in the winter of 1944, after this retreat had taken them into Ukraine, which they had conquered, was for Ukraine. And it was a very bitter, vicious struggle in the worst of weather imaginable. And I try to describe that through the experiences of those who were actually in those bunkers, freezing, very often freezing to the point where their limbs had to be taken off. The retreat carries on all the way up. In January, Leningrad, which had been under 876 days of siege, where 1 million people had died, was liberated. I can never quite get my head around that. 1 million people dying. This is civilians. This is not fighters inside Leningrad. Now St. Petersburg, of course. The advance continues, and you reach a point of May of 1944. There had been the most important diplomatic meeting of the war so far, and actually, in my view, the most important, which took place in Tehran between the big three. And at that meeting, they decided, in effect, the fate of Eastern Europe, because it was by then certain that, in due course, the Allies were going to win. Stalin was in extraordinarily confident form. Roosevelt wanted to ingratiate himself with Stalin, so he had the view that he could, post-war, create a new world order alongside the Soviet Union. Churchill came away from that meeting reflecting, here I was, on one side the great American buffalo, on the other the great Russian bear, and in the middle was the little British donkey. That's to say, he was aware that our position was much weaker than it had been when we were fighting alone. In the act of D-Day, of course, the Allies played a major role. It was an extraordinary adventure, the D-Day landings, and what happened after that. Very hard fought, particularly in France, and it took a very long time to liberate France, to reach Paris. 2 months, more than 2 months. At the same time, the biggest battle of the whole war was being fought on the Eastern Front. It was called Bagration, named it by Stalin. And in that battle, 330,000 German troops were either killed, wounded, or captured. And the destruction of what was called Army Group Center, the main army group there, actually was the destruction of the capacity, effectively, of Germans to fight. Only the most wild-eyed Nazi could conceivably believe that it was still possible to win the war. That victory allowed Stalin's men to get to Warsaw, which was the last terrible final act on the Eastern Front, the Warsaw Uprising, heroic and horribly ill-advised. The political debate that was going on all the way through was an increasingly alarmed Churchill about the power of the Soviet Union. Don't you know, he would say to Eden, it's all there in the documentation, don't you know they're coming across Europe like a tide? It's an evil force. Roosevelt, to the contrary, as I indicated, was cozying up the whole time because he still believed that it would be possible to rule the world with Stalin. So you reach the end of 1944 when Hitler in Berlin is with one of his key figures, who's an heir advisor, and says to him, if we fail, it will be the failure of the German people. And if we fail, we will at least go down and bring the world down with us. And they continued to fight on. And we reached 1945, and of course the end of the war. And tellingly, this political footnote of history, within 12 days of celebrating VE Day here in this city, with massive joy, Churchill was saying to his most senior military advisors, the chief general staff, I want you to do me a paper. Is it possible for us to do a surprise attack on the Soviet armies in eastern Germany within weeks? And they did as they were bid, and the paper was called Operation Unthinkable. And that was partly because they said it is possible to take them on, but you would need the entire American army in Europe, you would need the German armies that are left, you would need all the Commonwealth armies, and it would be a long, drawn-out war of attrition. That was a measure of Soviet strength. So the book's general conclusion is that we were impotent against Stalin in order to have a victory against the Nazis. And, of course, it was a very critical victory. Freedom, democracy, the rule of law was salvaged in the West. In the East, we know what happened, and the original, ostensible casus belli why we declared war on September the 3rd, 1939, Poland was in the grip of the Soviet Union. I'm going to just finish by reading one extract from this book, because I haven't really dwelt here, but it does in the book, I'm afraid, on the total horror of war. The awfulness, the Eastern Front, it was remarkably civilized in comparison on the Western Front of the horrors perpetrated, and not only the Holocaust, which was first, the first of the of the death camps was exposed by the Soviet Union in July, August of 1944, which was called Majdanek outside Lublin, and which was, you know, 6 months before Auschwitz, they liberated Auschwitz. And there was total horror at that. But in that same advance I was talking about eastwards, when they went dramatic speed towards Warsaw and then on, they unearthed a million graves, Russian graves, everywhere. The killing, the murderous barbarism of that front is beyond imagination. It created, however, the world in which we, as my case, just about born. I want to read this. It's from a poet, 23-year-old, aspiring poet, and his name was Willie Rees. He was an ordinary foot soldier in the German army. He had seen the terrible destruction wrought by his own armies as they retreated westward to certain defeat, and he was horrified by everything he saw: refugees in every direction, bridges burning, towns burning, woods burning, vehicles burning. And he wrote a poem about this depredation. And he wrote this: "We are at war because we're soldiers. I've burned all the cities, strangled all the women, brained all the children, plundered all the land. I have shot a million enemies, laid waste the fields, destroyed the churches, ravaged the souls of the inhabitants, spilled the blood and tears of all the mothers. I did it, all me. I did nothing, but I was a soldier." And that's stuck with me ever since I first unearthed it. It's not a celebratory way to end a delicious lunch with lovely people, and so I half apologise for that, but hope you might buy the book, because I think importantly, understanding what happened on the Eastern Front, which brought us victory — we would not have had victory without the Russians. I fear in the end that even without the West, in the end, the Soviet Union would have beaten the Germans, with all sorts of consequences which one quails to think of. However, I hope you'll think it's useful, and that you may therefore take the opportunity to buy it. Thank you for our lunch.
You have been listening to Radio Aldi, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Aldi magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldi.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial" as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldi.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial".